Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations, which is aired on the third Tuesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m. on WGXE Acre 90.7 FM. On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today's guest is Stephen Williamson Link. Stephen was born and raised in the northwest suburbs of Chicago and grew up in a loving, healthy Christian household. Stephen's parents both work in medicine, and he is the oldest of four children. Stephen has two brothers named Phil and Joe, and one sister named Hannah. He attended college near Milwaukee and received his undergraduate degree in theology from Concordia University in Wisconsin in 2009. He worked at West Portal Lutheran Church in San Francisco for 1 year, which is where he completed his vicarage, before graduating with a Master's of Divinity from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Stephen received and accepted his first call as a pastor in the summer of 2013 to Resurrection Lutheran Church in Cairo, New York, and has been serving there ever since. He turned 30 in January and recently moved from Main Street Catskill to a quiet old house in West Coxsackie, where his dog Bellamy is very happy to have some long overdue running room. But most importantly, he loves what he does and is both humbled and honored to serve the Lord and the wonderful people of his congregation in Greene County. Pastor Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Welcome. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Nice to meet you, too.
Yeah, you too. You too, mate.
Pastor Steve, what kind of dog is Bellamy?
She's a chocolate Labrador.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. And how did she acquire the name Bellamy?
I made a list of probably about 20 different names and went through trying to decide on one. I knew I wanted a female dog. That's what I grew up with. I chose the name Bellamy because, have you ever heard of the band Muse?
Yes. Yes.
From the UK. Hmm. Matt Bellamy is the lead singer and I really like his music.
Right.
And I always just thought his last name was really cool and pretty. And it turns out in French, it actually means beautiful friend.
Ah. So
it seemed fitting name for a puppy.
Very nice.
I believe it was Francis Bellamy that wrote the Pledge of Allegiance as part of a magazine competition or something. He was from Mount Morris, New York.
Oh.
Did my student teaching there.
And there's a famous wildlife and conservation expert in Britain called Dr. David Bellamy. And he's rocking with his grays, rubbing a big giant beard, and he's really, really animated. Check him out.
Never heard of him.
No kidding.
Sounds really cool, though.
Right on. And what accent, what part of England is that from?
I have no idea.
Oh. But that's what he sounds like.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Dr. David Bellamy.
Where is your accent from?
Scotland.
Scotland.
Glasgow. Right. Have you ever been to Europe?
I've been to Europe. Never been to Scotland.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Spent some time in England. I lived in Cambridge for a few months.
Right.
Doing an internship through my church when I was sophomore in college.
And was it the Cambridge University?
It was the town of Cambridge, but it wasn't Cambridge University. It was a place called the Westfield House, which is right. a school for theology students.
Did you check out the rowing clubs there? And
I did. Yeah.
That's
crew.
Yeah. Because at the time, I think it was around about April time, they have the big race, the Oxford and Cambridge race.
Right. Yeah. It's a big deal there. You see them practicing all the time.
Yeah. So, and you know, Poughkeepsie is quite a famous place for rowing as well. If you get into Poughkeepsie at any time in the summer or the spring, you'll see loads of guys out there, guys and women, you know, out there, you know, rowing. And I was watching a documentary on the TV about trains in Poughkeepsie area and stuff like that, and it was showing you all these rowing, and Poughkeepsie was like a centre for, you know, high quality rowing.
They go to the Hudson?
Yeah.
So do they need like hazmat suits or like bio suits to do that? Or is it just,
no,
do they
just accept
the consequences of the whatever splashes on them from the river?
Yeah, exactly. So these guys with growths in their leg and stuff like that.
Crew is amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, rowing's a big thing in Britain.
I remember
in that part of the world.
At Geneseo, the freshman year, the kids that join the crew team would be getting up at 4 a.m. or earlier to go and do practice, and then they'd go to their classes. And I remember thinking, gosh, I'm exhausted just from class. I can't imagine getting up 2-3 hours early to go and row my brains out.
I think I'd be the guy at the front. Move it! Yeah. Move it, you!
Right.
Sounding like the guy from the wall, the Pink Floyd's wall.
Oh, yeah.
Put! Put, you see, boy! I'd be like, row it! Row it!
There's a pub. I can't remember if it's in Cambridge or it's pretty close. I think it's called The Anchor. Right. And I believe it was Roger Waters, was one of them from Pink Floyd, and used to hang out there all the time.
Right.
And they had his lyrics on the wall, and it was pretty neat. People loved it.
Cool.
Pastor, how did you like San Francisco?
Oh, I loved it. It was terrific.
Yeah.
It's funny because maybe, I don't know if it's the way I talk or just the way that I look or something, but people used to think I was from California all the time in college.
Kind of a surfer guy.
Yeah, exactly. I guess I have that kind of personality or something. So
that vibe going on.
Yeah, but I'd never been to California until I moved out there for Vicarage.
Now, I see from your bio that you've traveled quite a bit in terms of different areas where you've done like your studies and... You know, it's not just one area. You've been to Indiana as well. Mm-hmm. So is traveling a passion of yours?
I really like traveling. Mm-hmm. Definitely. People from New York would probably not consider that different places. Than, you know, the Midwest is all just one giant spot.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's traveling.
Sure. Yeah. No, I grew up around Chicago, college in Milwaukee, and graduate school in Indiana.
Right.
And so... a lot of it looks pretty similar, actually.
Right.
But around where I grew up looks kind of different. It's a little bit more, a lot more concrete. But in Indiana, cornfields.
My girlfriend Julia, she was born and raised in Indiana, and I actually texted her today and asked her if, did you grow up anywhere near Fort Wayne? She went, no, I grew up in, I forget the name of the place. She'll kill me for saying that.
We can edit that out.
Yeah, but she says no. She doesn't. Didn't grow up anywhere near Fort Wayne, but she grew up there in a town that has one stoplight.
Huh. Yeah, a lot of people haven't heard of Fort Wayne. People that are Lutheran have, because the seminary is there. Other than that, most people kind of know it from it's where businesses like Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, and all that will try out new food there. To see if it's good.
Like, and then if Guinea Pig Nation.
Right. And then if it's disgusting, then they don't release it anywhere else. So that's kind of its claim to fame. Also, it was mentioned in Animal House.
No kidding.
That old movie. Yeah.
Oh.
The
Fort Wayne was?
Yeah. Right. You know the character Otter?
I don't remember the movie.
Kind of the womanizer main character there. He goes to the women's college to try and get some dates.
Oh, sure.
He picks the person out of the newspaper who was in a kiln accident or whatever. Don Leibowitz, I think, was her name. That's sad. I remember that. But she was from Fort Wayne, it's Indiana. That's the only time I've heard it mentioned in the movie. In the 70s.
Brilliant.
Did you get a lot of rain in San Francisco while you were there?
Yeah, you do. Pretty much the weather there, like an average day in San Francisco, tends to be about 70 degrees and foggy in the morning and then sunny in the afternoon.
So you might have been inspired to listen to Bob Dylan's A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall when you were in San Francisco and expecting this rain.
Oh, most certainly. And definitely a lot of Bob Dylan fans out there.
It's okay.
There.
I'm used to it. I'm used to it.
It's a good transition, by the way.
So why that song? Is your first song that you will take to your cabin in the Catskills weekend getaway retreat?
Sure. Well, I can remember the first... I love this song, and I've listened to it many, many times. I can remember the first time I heard it, and it was very important to me. I was in a class in high school called Pop Inc., and I remember the name of it because it's the only class I've ever failed in my life. And it was mostly just because there was a... we were supposed to keep a journal the entire time. And I loved the class. I loved it. And it was, I listened and I participated and everything. And I did all the other assignments, but there was a journal you're supposed to keep every day. And I must have just not been paying attention. I was diagnosed with ADD after this semester.
Oh, nice.
And that helped a lot. But so I failed that class. But the class was essentially we'd listen to important music and different artists. And so we had a day when it was Bob Dylan. And I remember we listened to one song. I don't remember what the first one was. And then the bell rang and it was right before lunch. And so he said, my teacher, who was also my choir teacher, Mr. Finch, he said, if you want to leave, you can leave. If you want to stay and listen, you can stay and listen. And I wanted to stay and listen because I hadn't heard music like that before. And the last two songs he played were Masters of War, which kind of blew me away because it just has an energy and an anger I'd never really heard in the words of a song before. And then this was the last one he played. And it's kind of a long one, but I listened in silence with him through the whole thing in the basement of that chapel. And when it was over, I was kind of teary-eyed, and we just kind of left in silence. And then I ate lunch in a room alone full of people. yeah. But it's a wonderful song because it just Bob Dylan actually said every line in it could be the first line of an entirely new song. And so it was the first time that I had really kind of heard the passion and the poetry that could be included in music. And so it was a meaningful experience to me, and it sent me on a Bob Dylan craze of about 6 years straight.
Well, I was just going to say that to you. Dylan did state that the lyrics were taken from the initial lines of songs that he thought he would never have time to write.
Right.
So that's quite remarkable in respect that you can take lines from a mishmash of different lines that are connected to other songs and make such a beautiful song like A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. Mm-hmm. A lot of people thought, because of the time of when it was released, that it was something to do with the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Right, Acid Rain.
Yeah, and a lot of people were saying Hard Rain represented Acid Rain and all that. But he himself said, Dylan, that's not true. He said, and I'll quote, "No, it's not atomic rain, it's just hard rain. It isn't the fallout rain. I mean some sort of end that just isn't going to happen. In the last verse, when I say the pellets of poison are flooding the waters, that means all the lies that people get told on the radios and in their newspapers." It's kind of apt for today, isn't it?
Well, not on this show.
Not in this show, of course, but yeah, you're right. But... But in terms of, and you know, in a wider sense, like politics and all the stuff that we get fed at the moment. But yeah. He categorically said that it's got nothing to do with that.
Right. I've heard him introduce it as simply as it was in a recording, maybe in the Newport Folk Music Festival. He starts with just like, "Hard rain's gonna fall means something's gonna happen," and then he goes into it.
Yeah.
It's interesting that it was lines of songs that he never thought he'd have time to write. It's from his first album. His first original album. He had an album full of covers before, but this was his first one, Free Will and Bob Dylan.
And apparently the song was actually written more than a month before the Cuban Missile Crisis actually broke. So,
wow.
But you know, just one more thing before we play the song. Mm-hmm. You were saying that, you know, you sat in the room and you were kind of teary-eyed.
Yeah.
Author Ian MacDonald describes A Hard Rain as one of the most idiosyncratic protest songs ever written, and there was somebody else I was reading about who was saying that, and I can't see his name at the moment, but I heard this person whose name will come back to me in a minute. "I heard Hard Rain, I think, and wept because it seemed that the torch had been passed from one generation to another, from earlier bohemian or beat illumination to self-empowerment music." So it wasn't just you, the whole generation of people were profoundly touched by this man's genius.
Right, if you watch him perform it in Prince Albert Hall, in some of those old videos, I think it was in Don't Look Back maybe, he's up on stage, this big stage, you know, in this grand venue, and it's him, a stool with some harmonicas on it and his acoustic guitar, and everybody, young people, were, you know, just silent. Just yeah. Listen to the words. It's pretty remarkable. And the last verse always, even still, can make me teary eyed. And I kind of feel a strong relation to that. And we can maybe talk about that after the song.
"Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, It's a hard rain's gonna fall. Oh, what did you see, my blue-eyed son? And what did you see, my darling young one? I saw a newborn baby with wild wolves all around it. I saw a highway of diamonds with nobody on it. I saw a black branch with blood that kept dripping. I saw a room full of men with their hammers a-bleeding. I saw a white ladder all covered with water. I saw 10,000 talkers whose tongues were all broken. I saw guns and sharp swords in the hands of young children. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, and it's a hard rain's gonna fall. Oh, what did you hear, my blue-eyed son? And what did you hear, my darling young one? I heard the sound of a thunder that roared out a warning. I heard the roar of a wave that could drown the whole world. I heard 100 drummers whose hands were a-blazing. I heard 10,000 whispering and nobody listening. I heard one person starve, I heard many people laughing. I heard the song of a poet who died in the gutter. I heard the sound of a clown who cried in the alley. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain's are gonna fall. Oh, what did you meet, my blue-eyed son? And who did you meet, my darling young one? I met a young child beside a dead pony. I met a white man who walked a black dog. I met a young woman whose body was burning. I met a young girl, she gave me a rainbow. I met one man who was wounded in love. I met another man who was wounded in hatred. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rains are gonna fall. And what'll you do now, my blue-eyed son? And what'll you do now, my darling young one? I'm a-going back out for the rain starts a-falling. I'll walk to the depths of the deepest dark forest, where the people are many and their hands are all empty. Where the pellets of poison are flooding their waters. Where the home in the valley meets the damp, dirty prison. And the executioner's face is always well hidden. Where hunger is ugly, where the souls are forgotten. where black is the color, where none is the number. And I'll tell it and speak it and think it and breathe it, and reflect from the mountain so all souls can see it. And I'll stand on the ocean until I start sinking, but I'll know my song well before I start singing. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, and it's a hard, it's a hard rains are gonna fall.
That was Bob Dylan, "A Hard Rain Is Gonna Fall." Fantastic. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. On the show, we have today's guest, Steve Williamson-Link, who's talking about his songs and his items that he's bringing to his Catskill Cabin getaway. Mike, what is one of his next items?
The next item is your grandfather's Black Bible. Why bring that?
Daft question.
I don't think it's a daft question. Well, okay, so he's a pastor.
Ka-ching!
This is the second time I've done this. Ask the pastor why they're bringing a Bible.
Yeah,
but
that's because pastors work on their vacation. That's yeah. It's funny because I was just telling you in the break about how, you know, this concept for the show is so interesting to me. When I was thinking about what I wanted to bring, it actually wasn't too difficult of a decision for me as far as the items and the songs. The songs was a little bit more difficult, but I, of course, would want to bring a Bible because if I'm going to be all alone in the middle of nowhere, I want to, you know, have the Word of God with me. I want to, you know, have that reassurance that I'm not truly alone, but that he is always with me.
It's always good if you got it in your hand as well. If you turn around, there's a big bear there, you can smack it in the face.
That's right, it's a big buck. You can take down a bear.
Yeah.
The reason I chose my grandfather's Black Bible was because when I was answering these questions, for some reason in my head, I was kind of thinking, I'm going to go out to this cabin and live there forever. Maybe that was wishful thinking. I'm naturally an introvert.
Sure, Bellamy wouldn't be too happy about that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so,
wait a minute, you don't take me, no?
Yeah, no. Well, it says no pets. I follow the rules. You know, if I was going to go out there and it was only a few things I could bring, I want to bring something that reminds me of my family and
sure.
Something that's meaningful. I also like old things. I'm not quite sure why. My parents, when I was young, used to collect antiques. And when I was a kid, I thought it was, you know, silly, you know, because they dragged me along to these auctions and stuff on Saturday.
I love auctions.
But I think it influenced me in some way that I like things with history.
I think I'm an auction addict.
Nice.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, especially car auctions.
You can get in a lot of trouble in those.
Now, do you watch Antiques Roadshow?
I have. I have a TV, and it's plugged in about maybe 25% of the time. So I don't watch a ton of TV, but I actually do like that show.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, because it's interesting, but then it's also kind of funny when people think they have this treasure and it turns out to just be garbage.
It's just nothing. It's worth $20.
I got this from my grandfather back in 1920, and he got it from Colonel Custer when they were at...
Sir, this was made in 1970. Purchased at a gas station.
It's a fake.
That's right. It's been painted four times, and nothing's original.
The patina is non-existent.
Oh.
Now, it's your grandfather's Bible, but it's not a family Bible.
I don't believe so. I know it was his study Bible. It's a Concordia Study Bible, NIV translation. I usually use the ESV translation, but you know, I pictured I was going out into the woods to die, and so I wanted my grandfather's Bible with me.
Does it have like notes and stuff?
Yeah, it's got a few. Mm-hmm. Right. Not as much as some of the modern ones, but that are a little bit more academic and
it'd be interesting.
You know, but like from your grandfather.
There may be a few,
yeah.
Nothing that I can kind of notice that's in there specifically, but it's definitely well worn.
Right.
It looks pretty beat up because it was well loved.
Well, that's all the reason to take it with you.
Mm-hmm. Bible trivia time, gentlemen. I have two questions.
Go on.
What is the last word in the Bible, Andy?
Pizza.
Pastor Steve.
That's a great question. You know, I'm stumped. I have no clue.
Right, hold on. Give us a first letter.
A.
A. Amen.
It is amen.
All right. It is true.
Second question. A chariot imported from Egypt. Chariot. I don't think I said that quite right. A chariot imported from Egypt cost around 600 shekels of silver. This is from 1 Kings. What would the equivalent in dollars be today?
For 600 shekels?
For 600 shekels.
I'll let you go first.
I don't know. See, that's why you want to study Bible, because then you don't have to memorize all the ancient currency tables.
I'll say...
Do you want me to guess?
Yeah.
I'll take a guess.
Sure.
You said 600?
600 shekels.
Let's say $1,000.
1,000?
I would say $18,000.
$18,000? Well, one shekel was 4 days' wages. So the equivalent today would be $77,000 for a chariot. That is one luxury chariot.
I'd be on fire.
Coming
I'll tell you.
From Egypt.
That's right, yeah. See, that was one of those antique roadshow turns.
I thought it would only be worth 1,000.
That's something you want to find in your attic.
A chariot? I don't think a chariot could fit in your attic, could it?
It couldn't fit in your attic, but you could hook it up to some horses, and you could travel with it. And while traveling, you could listen to another traveling song by Bright Eyes, which is the next song you're going to be listening to on your Catskill Cabin Getaway. Why that song?
I like Bright Eyes. I got into him kind of in college. A roommate of mine turned me on to him. He started writing songs when he was really young, and... He's actually kind of depressing, but I don't know.
Your friend or the guy from Bright Eyes?
Eyes. Connor Overs, the writer of Bright Eyes. But I don't know. I guess I like sadder music, I guess, most of the time, just because it's very human. And I think it's kind of easy to relate to. And it's easy to make people happy with music. You know, you could just play any old Motown song and make people dance. to make people kind of think and feel a different type of emotion is a little bit more difficult. I like this song because, first of all, I love the music and it kind of pumps me up, and it's a staple on my any road trip I go to. Also it has an interesting correlation between this idea of being creative and writing, and then also the openness of a road that's ahead of you.
Metaphor.
Right. The second verse or third verse or something like that says something along the lines of, I'm writing on a typewriter. I guess you'd call that painting in a cave. There's a word I can't remember and a feeling I cannot escape. And now my ashtray is overflowing. I'm still staring at a clean white page. Now in morning's at my window and she's sending me to bed again. I can definitely relate to that. It sounds like a good part of my college experience, but there's nothing more intimidating and exciting than a blank page of paper.
Sure.
And it's kind of the same way with an open road. You don't know what lies ahead, and you got some decisions to make.
Well, going back to what you were saying about writing, you know, essentially soulful and meaningful lyrics that mean something from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, one of the singer-songwriters that comes to mind for me when it comes to that is Chris Christopherson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the songs, Sunday Morning Coming Down, I don't know if you ever heard of that song.
Can't think of it right.
It's just one of those songs that it just brings to life the melancholy of a Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we finish here today, I'll... You know, you can download the song or whatever and have a listen to it. But I think writing such a meaningful song and bringing lyrics out that means such has such soulful meaning is very, very hard to do. And
mm-hmm.
I greatly admire it. I agree with you.
Right. And as a Christian, I believe, you know, in the Bible and, you know, it says in the beginning was the Word. You know, God spoke and things came into existence.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Bible also tells us that music is one of the few things we know that's eternal. And so when you mix words and music, it really is this beautiful combination that's it's hard to match to anything. It can make you feel things that you never even knew you felt.
Was another travelling song by Bright Eyes. So, the next item you're bringing, Steve... sorry, can I call you Steve?
Yeah, sure.
Your next item you're bringing is a Martin acoustic guitar.
Yeah, I've liked the guitar for a very long time. I first got interested in it when I was in maybe third grade, and I first saw Back to the Future... Nice. And Marty McFly playing Johnny B. Goode was one of the most thrilling things I'd ever seen in a movie, and I just loved it. So I, of course, wanted to play that. And my parents were kind enough to get me guitar lessons, and I didn't like that. I was it seemed kind of more like homework, and I was very bad at it to begin with. And so I'm ashamed to say I quit for quite a long time. Right. And then when I got into be a freshman in high school, I started kind of listening to a lot more music, and I really wanted to play again. And so I got a job during the summer with a family friend doing concrete construction.
Cool. Yipes.
Yeah, it was hard. I hated the job, but I'm glad I did it now. It was very hard work, very early mornings.
One of our former guests nearly died doing some form of concrete stuff.
Doing drilling wells up in Alaska.
Yeah.
Where they would drill a well, and then they had to pump like kind of a fluid down in there. Uh-huh. And maybe it was for fracking. I can't remember. But no, anyways, there was this gigantic sinkhole that filled with this fluid, and the sinkhole was like 6 feet deep. Uh-huh. And he was just walking along, and it looked like a flat ground because it had filled to the ground level. And he fell into this pit over his head in foam, and like he couldn't breathe.
Oh, that's so terrifying.
By some miracle, a guy came and like pulled him out of there, yanked him out.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry to interrupt, Pastor.
Wow. Yeah. No, that's really scary. So
no, actually, sorry to interrupt you. He said at the time he was underneath, he was like, "All right, well, my life's been good."
Yeah, I had a pretty good run.
Yeah, at that point, you think you're close to the end. I never had that experience. I never almost died. I wished death upon myself at 6 o'clock in the morning many times.
Yeah.
But, putting on those dirty boots. But so I worked a whole summer and earned some good money, and I bought my first electric guitar and amplifier, and taught myself how to play. So
cool.
I'm self-taught. Well, it's kind of like a I would describe it as kind of like a hillbilly kind of type of guitar, because I can talk okay, but I can't read very well. So if you put a sheet music in front of me, I'd stare at it for a while, but I can hear something and I can sound it out.
Wow. If you can play three chords in a row, you're far better than me, because I can't play the guitar. So.
Right. And I have lots of guitars, but this Martin guitar, I got it just recently, and it's the one of the most beautiful instruments I've ever heard.
Wow.
I love it. And it's a great, great instrument to use writing and playing in songs.
Now, a quick quiz question.
Okay.
Now, between acoustic guitars had a profound influence on modern music, especially after guitars became the most popular musical instrument on the planet in the early 20th century. Today, there are two instruments that are the most popular on the planet. The guitar is one. What is the other?
I would say piano.
I wanted to say
seems
piano.
Obvious.
Do I have to pick a different
instrument?
That was
too easy. It was a piano.
No.
Well done, lads.
Yeah. Guitars are neat because it's so earthy. You know, it's a simple type of instrument. You know, it's metal and wood and.
But it sounds great.
That's about it. It does. Yeah.
Especially, I really appreciate acoustic guitars. Somehow there's just kind of like this great harmonic complexity to the sound, and mm-hmm. you know, people's fingers rubbing on the strings, and you get all that in a good recording. It's cool.
Did you know that a bass guitar can be acoustic as well?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, like a bass.
I didn't know that. I thought they were just electric.
Yeah, not just the stand-up basses, but they actually sell acoustic bass guitars. I don't
no
know.
Kidding.
Good they
I didn't
sound,
know that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right, we'll move on. Your next item is Mike, what
a
is it?
Royal Quiet Deluxe Portable Typewriter.
He could have done adverts in the 60s.
That's right.
Pastor, can you type without looking at the keys?
I can, but I'll make mistakes. I kind of grew up in the age when around, you know, fifth grade, something like that, we had typing class in school.
All right.
You know, Mavis Beacon and all that fun stuff too.
Oh, yeah.
There was obviously a lot of us in the class and not a whole lot of supervision, because I never really learned how to type properly. So I actually type using just my index and middle fingers and thumbs. I peck even on computer
as well. Yeah.
And so I'm really fast at it, but I do it kind of.
Yeah, I'm the same. You're probably a lot faster than me. I peck, but you know, it gets the job done. But when I'm maybe sitting with Mike, he types, and he can look at the screen and type. Did you get some formal training, Mike?
I did, yeah. I was in high school, walking into the band room in like maybe ninth grade, and one of my buddies was sitting in, for some reason, in the teacher's office, typing on the teacher's computer, just looking at the screen. And I stopped and was like, how do you do that? And he was like, oh, I took the typing class that they have here. I was like, and so I took it the next year or the year after, I don't know. And it was the best decision because it just made my studying and writing so much more efficient. The ability to type, to look at a book and type what I'm reading without having to go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And I am not perfect. I make tons of mistakes and I try to really challenge myself to.
But computers are getting to the stage now where they correct mistakes anyway.
Autocorrect. Yeah, so, it helps a lot.
Like if, for example, if you don't put a capital at the beginning of a word or a sentence, then it just automatically changes itself.
It. Sure. You know? Or a misspelled word. But why a typewriter?
I have a couple typewriters and I got my first typewriter when I think it was the Christmas before I went to college. My dad bought me one. I was reading a lot. I really liked reading and poetry. And I was at that stage, I was really, really into Bob Dylan and Ernest Hemingway and some other authors. And my dad got me one just on a whim for Christmas. And it was supposed to be kind of one of those gifts that's like, oh, if you like it, you like it. If not, it's, you know, just there. I loved it and I fell in love with it almost immediately and it kind of sparked a whole creative streak for me.
Do you still use it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I've got it queued up at my house right now. I was just using it yesterday.
Do you prefer that to a computer?
It depends on what I'm doing. I use a computer for work every day. The typewriter I use for anything, either creative, kind of personal projects, or if I'm really want it to be perfect, then I use a typewriter because it, in my opinion, the typewriter is just like the most awesome machine ever created. You know, it's very manly when you think about it. It's just this huge chunk of steel. You're staining pieces of paper.
How do you correct a mistake?
I usually kind of leave the mistakes till the end and then I retype it. So I'm kind of perfectionist that way. If I mess up on one line, I'll go through and retype the whole thing. If it's a poem or a song or something like that. But so I've used it for work. I've written papers on it for school and stuff, short ones, and I've written sermons on it. So it kind of just depends on if I want to write something and I need to take the time to think before I push the buttons. Because with a typewriter, you it really does force you to think about
Make
what
sure
you want to say
and
be deliberate about it too. And then also if you're you know using kind of more abstract things like acrostic or you know, making shapes and stuff like that, you actually have to count out how many spaces it's going to take in order to make a line or something like that.
Sure.
Interesting.
Yeah, but there's a if you're writing on a computer, it just kind of feels like, I mean, you could accidentally delete it with your elbow in 2 seconds. When you're putting on a typewriter, it really does kind of feel permanent. And when you're going faster and you're going harder, you can hear it and you can feel it. And you get calluses on your fingers when you're changing it. It gets dirty. And, you know, it just feels really fulfilling.
Cool.
Yeah. And so I've got a couple of them, but this one my dad gave me, and it's definitely my favorite.
This particular typewriter was the typewriter of choice for Ernest Hemingway.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good enough for Hemingway.
Yeah, and the one I have is around the same time. It's 1940s.
Maybe it was his.
Wow.
Maybe it was his. Maybe he could take it on Antiques Roadshow because it actually was his.
The assessor passes out. That guy has Ernest Hemingway's typewriter.
It's not nearly that dirty and doesn't smell as bad. I can't imagine Ernest Hemingway owning it.
Rough it up, pour some coffee on it and stuff like that. And take it.
Yeah,
it
hasn't been gored by any bulls or stained with whiskey and stuff like that. But yeah, it's a great machine. I love it.
Now, your next song is American Girl by Tom Petty.
Right.
What does the song mean to you?
The song, I guess the lyrics aren't as meaningful to me other than the one line, God, it's so painful when something that's so close is still so far to reach. I think that could sum about 75% of popular songs, you know, this idea of yearning and searching for something. But I love Tom Petty and I love his music and I have all of his albums. And this song, it just reminds me of really good times with friends. I can picture nights, you know, road trips and, you know, walking with a good gang of fellas down Navy Pier and seeing fireworks over the Ferris Wheel and all sorts of really great stuff. And so it's one of my favorite rock songs. It's just, it's kind of like a perfectly orchestrated pop song, I guess. It makes you, get you pumped up, ready for a night in town.
Now, a couple of things. One thing that strikes me about this this choice, Tom Petty. Tom Petty has worked, collaborated very closely with Bob Dylan. Mm-hmm. They obviously played in the Traveling Wilburys together, and you know, they played a lot of music together.
The Heartbreakers were Bob Dylan's backup band for a tour too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One guy that that kind of seems to have been a mainstay in the Traveling Wilburys is Jeff Lynne.
Mm-hmm.
Have you listened to ELO?
I do. Oh yeah, ELO's great.
Lovely, mm-hmm. aren't they? Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Right. Now, going back to the song American Girl. Yeah. Now, apparently the song, the urban legend is, do you know what the urban legend of the song is?
I actually don't know too much about the background.
So the urban legend of the song is that it's about a desperate girl on a balcony, and one of the lines is, she's hearing cars roll by out on 441. Now, 441 is in Florida, apparently, and the urban legend is, it's became a huge urban legend myth down in Florida, that the song was written about a girl committing suicide at the Beatty Towers University of Florida, and that story grew arms and legs, and it's an urban myth in Florida, but it's been refuted by Petty. He says it's become an urban myth. The song has nothing to do with that, but the story really gets around. They really got the whole. The whole story. I've even seen magazines articles written about the story. It's true. Is it true or isn't it true? Had they just called me, they'd have found out that it wasn't true. He actually wrote the song when he was in California, and it's got nothing to do with it. But I found that quite interesting. That you know, that's, it's amazing how stories just grow arms and legs. Now, apparently, the opening lyric, "Raised in on promises," echoes a line of dialogue in Francis Ford Coppola's 1963 film Dementia 13, referring to another woman. The character Louise says at minute 22, "Especially an American girl, you can see she's been raised on promises."
Huh.
So maybe that's where the song, maybe that movie actually influenced his writing.
Could be. I mean, and I know he grew up in Florida. He actually, the Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers actually played a gig in some small dive in Florida with Lynyrd Skynyrd before they were both known.
Wow.
And they said nobody was there.
Unbelievable. Imagine that one person's got a ticket to the...
That's right. One person clapping like your story.
Gosh.
Something that is so close.
That was American Girl by Tom Petty. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. WGXC is community radio, and if you enjoy shows like Catskill Cabin Conversations, please visit WGXC.org and donate at your earliest convenience to keep shows like Catskill Cabin Conversations going. Today in the studio, we have Pastor Stephen Williamson Link, and he's been telling us about the songs and items he's going to take with him on his Catskill Cabin getaway. Pastor, thanks again for being here.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's been fun.
Your next item, last item, is a 12th century wooden cross necklace. For reals, 12th century?
That's what I'm told. My dad is, and I'm wearing it right now. That's right. My dad is an eBay addict, and he often finds like really, really neat stuff, religious icons and such. And my parents gave me this cross when I graduated from seminary and was going to become a pastor. And I've had lots of crosses before, but I love the feel and the look of this. And like I said, I like old things. So it's kind of neat to carry something around with you that, I mean, who knows the history of this thing and who owned it, but it's obviously, you know, somebody made it by hand. And
it's lovely.
Yeah, it's missing a couple pieces and everything.
That adds to the authenticity.
Right, and it actually kind of goes with my style and stuff. So since I got it, maybe 4 years ago or so, I've taken it off to shower for about 10 minutes a day. But other than that, I keep it on me at all times. And I'm not a jewelry person either. I never wear rings or bracelets or watches and
it's very nice.
Necklace and stuff. Thank you.
Yeah. Very cool. I once wore a cross necklace for a time, especially in college. I got it from my mom. It was a cross made out of nails that were like bent over one another. And this one time I would go to the gym regularly and I was bench pressing and I kept feeling this like sharp, like electric shock in my chest when I would bench press. And I was like, what is going on with this? Is this something? And I was like, oh, I keep stabbing myself with my cross necklace with the bar. Ow, ow. So, I had to make some
stigmata
changes.
Stigmata or something.
Yeah. So.
Scarred. Are you scarred?
No, I'm not. No, thank heavens. But I had to make some changes there with the cross necklace. And Pastor, your last song is "The Lord Bless You and Keep You" by John Rutter.
Mm-hmm.
Why that song?
I first heard this song when I was in high school. I was in some choirs, and it was a staple for all of the choirs at the school that the last song of every concert would be this song, a cappella, and we would go around the audience and all stand, you know, about 3 feet apart and sing it from there. And so I've sung it, who knows, maybe like 50 times in my lifetime. And it was always really beautiful, and it was always a tearjerker too. But maybe 2 years ago or 1 year ago, our choir at church actually sang this same song in arrangement, and I didn't know it was going to happen. And it just moved me very much to hear it, and it was beautiful. And I've joined the choir since then, so hopefully I can convince our director, Pam Slater, to do it again, because it's beautiful. But since then, it kind of reminded me of it, and I actually listen to it every night before I go to sleep. It kind of gets me in a nice, peaceful mood. And if I was gonna, die tomorrow and had my iPod next to me, I wouldn't mind having it be the song to go meet the Lord too.
Ah, it's excellent. Very beautiful. Well, I don't mean excellent that you might
That's
die,
right.
But
hopefully not.
Yeah. Don't do it, Pastor.
That's right.
There's still time.
You imagine he's lying listening to his headphones and he falls asleep and he automatically touches it with his elbow or something and that song comes on and he's like, I'm dying.
Uh-oh.
That's not so bad. It feels like just laying in bed.
It doesn't remind me of death. It reminds me of life, but it's a beautiful blessing and I love hearing it.
Yeah. That was "The Lord Bless You and Keep You" by John Rutter. Now, Pastor Stephen, we're coming to the end of our show. It's been fantastic. We've thoroughly enjoyed listening to your stories and your views on your music and items. It's been great. Now, before you go, we have one last question we want to ask you. And that is, Mike.
Pastor Steve, how do you take your coffee?
Oh, good question. If I'm out and it's I usually have a splash of milk in my coffee. If I'm home, usually black because I don't go shopping.
A splash.
Splash of milk. What kind of milk?
Skim.
Skim milk.
No skimmed. Kidding. Splash of yep. skimmed milk.
Just a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you drink good coffee or just any old coffee?
This is gas station coffee right here.
Right, let's move on.
I have a Keurig machine at home, and I love it, and it's really cool. And I have a whole box of Caribou coffee. I like that.
Yeah. Ooh. You have one of those refillable K-cups?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Mm, yeah. Average.
Andy's a coffee connoisseur, so roasts his own beans and things.
Yeah, yes.
I'm not that sophisticated.
One day you may enter the club.
That's like what I said, Cumberland Farms right now.
Steve, thanks again for being on the show.
Yes, it's been great, mate. Thank you, man.
Hi, I'm Stephen Williamson Link, and you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC, ACRA 90.7 FM. Special thanks to George, Gordon, and Billy from the band White for the theme music, and everyone at WGXC. Thanks.